From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Mac.
My name is Noel.
And I am Ben. And most importantly, you're here, listeners. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Thanks so much. This is our last show of the year, you guys. The next time we come back, it will be 2016, provided, you know, the various apocalyptic cults around the world are not correct this year and that, you know, the world doesn't end.
Yeah, December 21st has already passed us, and a lot of times that's one of the dates that's used as this is when it's going to end. So, hey, we've made it so far.
Phew. Go team. So we also have something a little bit different for you today. Today, instead of looking at a specific topic or a listener request, the three of us are going to help you out for, you know, many of you probably celebrate Christmas. Many of you might just get together at your family's house at the end of the year, and you have that awkward moment where your relatives that you see once a year, once every 2 years, and really have nothing in common with other than the lottery of your genes. You get together with them and you have to talk with like Uncle Mike or Aunt Cynthia about something.
Maybe you are Uncle Mike. I just want to say it in this situation.
Call, Matt. Yeah, perhaps you, if you look around and there's not an Uncle Mike,
it's you.
Okay. Are you an Uncle Matt? Do you have any siblings or kids?
I am an Uncle Matt. Yeah.
Uncle Matt.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I like it. I look forward to being the weird, creepy uncle at our gatherings from here to the future.
And so, Matt, this approach to a show was your idea. Do you want to tell them a little bit about it?
Sure. Yeah. I guess it was my idea. I was showering and thoughts happened, which, you know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Were you doing the cream rinse, or were you,
I was literally standing
in the shampoo phase.
Just imagine me, not awake, maybe 10% awake, shower just going directly over my head and just going, oh man, I wonder what I'm going to talk with my family about. Because I've gotten into a couple discussions recently with my dad where, it's not heated in any way. It's just, I really want to understand where he's coming from. And, you know, my own beliefs sometimes start to fight up against that. So I want to find a way that we can find common ground, some subjects that we can talk about that maybe won't get into any fights, but it'll make everybody think and hopefully generate some cool conversation.
I think that is a very forward-thinking, solid tactic going in to the battleground that can be family holiday experiences.
I love you, man. I do think the world of you. I also think that's incredibly idealistic that people will reach a common ground. Maybe it will happen. Maybe there will be an end of the year miracle, but it's still a fantastic idea and well-intentioned to give you the audience. If you're looking for stuff to talk to your family about at the end of the year, then this will hopefully give you some, I guess, olive branches or some ammunition, depending on how it goes down.
Some food for thought, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you guys want me to go ahead and get started?
Well, you know what? I think you should kick it off.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, this is kind of starting at dark, which isn't my intention, but this is something that you can bring up that I don't think there is a side you can take that would make you like a combatant when you're discussing this topic. So it's the Highway of Tears. It's something we covered this year, and it's a subject where the bad person or the one side are literally murderers and rapists.
Well, it's a kind of an equalizer, really, you know, at least we can all admit, hopefully, that everyone at this table here, not murderers.
Well, yes.
One would hope.
But it's one of those things that it was a brand new subject for me when it came up. I think, Ben, you had talked about it briefly maybe on Car Stuff, or it had been mentioned to you or something to that effect. So we got on Scott Benjamin, who was your co-host on Car Stuff, and we discussed this topic about a highway in British Columbia where since 1969 – women and girls have gone missing or were murdered. I think there's 18 officially, we said, but then there are many more that are probably on there. You've probably heard the episode. If you have not, I would recommend checking it out, watching our video, then getting some of that information, because it's a fascinating subject, and there are things actually happening to perhaps help the situation up there. In the news, I saw a piece, just a quick thing about the First Nation groups getting together and coming up with...
Just to refresh her, there is something sort of specific about this area that made it conducive to these victims being sort of easy targets.
Yes, exactly. I don't want to rehash the whole episode, but you should know that hitchhiking is a big thing there, because a lot of the area, people are just, they don't have money to have a car and to get around places, but they also have to travel very long distances to get to where they work or to where they go to school. So what's happening now, the British government is working to commit $3 million to improve the public transit along this highway where a lot of this stuff happens, or these highways. It's a story from the CBC. And let's see, they're going to get $1.6 million over 2 years to enhance the transit services. But this is interesting. In the article, it says in a cost shared basis with local communities. So I don't know exactly what that entails, and I couldn't get more details.
Right. It could mean a couple things.
Maybe some sort of public option.
Some sort of public option to pay in tax. Specifically, this is Yellowhead Highway 16 between Prince Rupert and Prince George. It's a pretty rural area. Matt, as you said, this is an episode that is a great equalizer. We know this because earlier I had asked, or we had asked, folks on the internet, ladies and gentlemen, we asked you some of your favorite episodes of 2015, and that was one of the ones that kept coming up. It involves everything. There's corruption in the government, which now has some damage control applied. The problem, I would say, with this shared investment area or the shared investment aspect is that in very impoverished rural communities, there's not as much of a tax base to draw on. So this, what was the number again, Matt? 30 million?
Just 3 million.
Just 3 million.
And this is to improve everything from infrastructure of the roads themselves to, you know, the creating places where, I think they call them transit shelters. So okay. Places where people would feel safe, and then putting webcams in there,
like
security cameras.
Lit bus stops.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially. Yeah, I mean, it's better than nothing. One thing we received a lot of mail about, we had a lot of Canadians writing in.
Mm-hmm. And Canadians, sometimes who weren't even aware of the situation, who lived on the other side, perhaps, of Canada, which was really weird to me. It seems like it would be something that was more well known, but I'm glad that we were able to discuss it and put it out there. And I think, again, it's a dark topic, but it's one of those things that can really give some food for thought about how we treat specifically Native peoples, because this could go into all kinds of other conversations, which may be a little more harsh in the vibe. But, you know, again, it's cool. I like the idea that you could talk about these things with your family. I hope that you can.
Do you guys mind if I do one?
Please.
Oh, please do.
So this is, of my three, this is probably the most neutral, I would say. It's definitely dark, but I think it's definitely something that could be brought up and shared. And it's something that people could bring their own personal experiences with, as we experienced when we received an insane amount of mail about sleep paralysis.
Oh.
And shadow people. And, I mean, you know, I haven't been, you know, on the show properly for very long, but in the amount of time I've been on, that's definitely been the hot button, you know, listener mail response that we've gotten for sure. And so that particular topic really resonated with me, just because you're in such a vulnerable place when you're asleep and your mind is able to kind of run wild. You can take the anxieties of your day, of your week, of your life, and they are sort of translated into different scenarios, dreams that can be, you know, very clear, can be very abstract. There's all kinds of different ways that you can perceive these things. But when you start bringing into the equation this idea of like an alien other, like coming into your, you know, sanctity of your sleep, of your like, you know, resting place, then it really starts to make you think, where is that coming from? Is it coming from outside of you? Is it coming from within you? And I just thought it was a really interesting topic and I really enjoyed talking about it. And I did a little looking into it and seeing if there was any new studies. And it turns out there is. There's a psychiatry researcher at the University of Cambridge named Balan Jalal. And in his new study, he looked at 100 college students in Cairo looking for a correlation between stress, anxiety, and depression and experiencing sleep paralysis.
Oh, wow.
And when we were talking about it, there wasn't necessarily a common factor that we were able to determine. And we, from the mail that we got, it was all kinds of different people that were experiencing these symptoms, which again, not to rehash the episode too much, a lot of times included seeing shadowy figures out of the periphery of your eyes, of your sight in your bedroom, or experiencing a presence that comes upon you and presses down on your chest and, you know, sort of sucks the breath from you.
Mm-hmm.
And in this study, which he conducted in Cairo, Egypt, with college students, about 71% of the population that experiences sleep paralysis actually blame it on supernatural forces. And half of that 71% believe them to be caused by jinn, which are, to my understanding, Ben, you know, evil demonic forces that have roots in Islamic mythology. Is that accurate?
Right. So this is an interesting topic too. I thought about this as well. So I've long had a fascination with the theory of jinn, which while it's often treated as folklore in the West, in many areas in the Middle East or in Islamic culture, it is treated as a genuine phenomenon. The idea that Allah, which we've talked about on the show, the idea that Allah made angels, humans, and then the third sapient species, the jinn, out of a smokeless fire. Not necessarily evil creatures, depending upon the culture or the context, but in many ways filling in the role of what Christians or the West would recognize as demons. The most popular jinn in Western culture is, of course, Robin Williams as the genie in Aladdin, based incredibly loosely on several poor translations of 1001 Arabian Nights.
So I'd imagine maybe there are benevolent jinn and then there are evil jinn.
Right. Yeah. And there are different classes of jinn, just like, because they would have, according to the believers, a society that has the same a hierarchical nature, you know.
So that was the perception of mm-hmm. this, you know, the population that was part of this study. Mm-hmm. But as it turns out, that out of those who experienced sleep paralysis, and especially the ones who actually hallucinated, like some of these more intense visuals and concerning shadow people and creatures, mm-hmm. You know, invading their space, he actually found that these people were more likely to have suffered from PTSD, mm. anxiety, or chronic worry.
Ah, I see. Okay, so the mental state affects that as well. You know, we had an interesting talk off air about something just tangentially related to this. Can I use this one instead of one of my three? Because this tangent is interesting enough. I think we should chase it.
Of course.
All right. So we've talked before in the past about the most fascinating and beautiful in some ways, phenomenon of mind and matter, mind over matter proven to exist. And it began, I think, when Scott and Matt and I, for various reasons, were looking into a driving test that all the cabbies in London used to have to take.
Because the knowledge?
Yeah,
that's it.
You remember it. And the thing about the knowledge is that it's incredibly difficult, even in the age of GPS and all these drivers must memorize not only landmarks and routes and back routes, but alternate routes. And the amount of spatial memory that they have to dedicate to this is enormous. But what some studies have found is that long-time black cab drivers, who are the really expensive classy cabs for everyone outside of London, those those drivers have the area of their brain that is dedicated to spatial memory is physically larger than average. Because they have spent so much time dwelling on this, it has increased the growth and the density of their brain in that area. And furthermore, we find the same thing with, I am going somewhere with this, guys, I promise. We find the same thing with areas of the brain dedicated to empathy, or what we recognize as compassion, in longtime meditators, longtime Buddhist monks. I don't mean just your casual, I'm not napping, I'm meditating person. I mean, you know, people who dedicate their lives to it every day, the same way that cab drivers are out driving these weird routes every day. So this sounds hunky-dory and friendly when we contemplate that good thoughts can physiologically change the nature of your brain, or even the size of certain areas of your brain. So it makes me think, Noel, to this study, what happens to your brain if you spend every day worrying, you know, or you spend every day angry or plotting revenge? Is there a dark side equivalent to this? Not to be too Star Wars, but can you think yourself Sith?
That's crazy. I love that.
It's almost like the shadow people are manifestations of these worries that are creeping out of your subconscious and into your sort of half waking life. You know, I mean, I think that's, I'm into this idea.
Is there a snowball effect? Is there a positive feedback loop? Does, increase in PTSD equal an increase in sleep paralysis, equal an increase in anxiety, equal an increase in PTSD, and so on? Until your brain grows three sizes too large.
You guys should see the Magic the Gathering section of my brain. It's crazy.
Oh, man. I'm terrified.
Huge.
The last thing, though, there was referenced in this previous study that I mentioned, an additional study, and it involved looking at Cambodian refugees attending a psychiatric clinic. And 49 of 100 had at least one episode of sleep paralysis in the previous 12 months. And among the PTSD patients, 65% had monthly episodes of sleep paralysis versus 14.8 among non-PTSD patients. So I mean, it's just interesting to see this correlation, and it's something that I can kind of wrap my head around, you know, because I've never experienced that. I believe you said you've never experienced any kind of sleep paralysis, Matt.
That's true.
Ben, you haven't either, I don't believe.
Ben, we're not sure.
We're not sure.
I don't really have a comment.
That's fair.
Is that okay?
That's fair.
All right.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the mind sort of strives to explain away these kinds of things. And I think this is a pretty good place to look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's another great topic to discuss with your family, because I would just say the number of responses, like you said, we've gotten are large, very large comparatively. So perhaps someone at the dinner table will have a story.
I would not be surprised one bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what next, Matt?
The next thing I think you can discuss is a cool topic that is a bit cavernous, but I think you can get through it, and it comes up. There are really cool little smaller discussions that you can have on the side, and that is the idea of the deep web or the dark net. It's really cool, especially if you can kind of maybe talk to older people in your family about this kind of technology and explain to them, give them some visualizations about what it looks like. I think, Ben, you used really good iceberg analogy when we were talking about the deep web and all the unindexed stuff on the internet that exists, and then comparing that to the darker sides of some of the places you can access with the Onion Router and Tor, or both, which is the same thing.
And in my experience, it's something that a lot of people just don't know anything about.
Oh, yeah.
And even just to have like a basic discussion of what this is, I think is fascinating that it exists and all the litigation surrounding it with the whole Dread Pirate Roberts thing and all that.
Yeah. And it's a bonus that you can seem really smart and impress your people. If you missed our conversation with Alex Winter, who made a documentary called The Deep Web, definitely I would recommend going and checking that out.
Made also some made videos. A cool little movie called, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I heard something about that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, this one is, he's made a couple of very cool documentaries, and we had a chance to talk to him. It was, I would say, the coolest thing that I did this year. Well, there are a couple of really cool things. It's one of the coolest things.
He was sharp.
I got to do.
Really, really, really good interview. Mm-hmm. Definitely check that one out. Put that on the playlist for sure. The deep web story that I always think of, because it's kind of funny, is it also pertains to something else that's really interesting, which is just you know, who's responsible for artificial intelligence? Is it the person that created it? Is it the person that programmed it? Or once that thing makes a choice, are all bets off? There was a Swiss art collective called Median Gruppe Bittnick, which was a group of artists, you could call them kind of conceptual artists, that designed a robot art installation that they programmed to, they didn't tell it what to buy, but they gave it a budget of $100 in bitcoins each week, and the robot randomly chose items off of a service on the dark net called Alpha Bay, and it actually ended up buying some drugs. I believe it was ecstasy.
Didn't it ship it to the installation? Wasn't that the thing? Maybe that was something else.
Well, I think it was part of the installation was were the items themselves. I believe, because they were confiscated at the end of the day when this thing was shut down. But it sort of opened up this discussion of, you know, who's responsible? Is it the, you know, the creator or the consciousness, so-called consciousness of the bot? So I don't know. Do you remember that story, Ben?
I do. Yeah. And it's a fascinating one, because it also intersects with the future of consciousness. And I think you got to the heart of the question there, Noel, philosophically. To whom is the punishment meted? You know, one last thing I'll add here, without going too far into it, is the big question about the dark net for most people is, does it actually work? Can you honestly be anonymous? And unless you are very, very talented and at least moderately lucky, the answer is absolutely not. The answer is very close to the Abraham Lincoln quotation about fooling some of the people some of the time. If you are routinely, aggressively, proactively using something, depending on the type of stuff you're doing, especially if you're uploading something, then your chances of getting caught rise stratospherically over time. And the reason this happens is because there is a pernicious and dogged and unending campaign on the behalf of not just our government, but other governments, to remove anonymity from the internet under the guise of the great boogeyman, national security. This reflects my opinion, maybe not necessarily the opinion of my co-hosts, nor the opinion of our company at large, but this to me, it reflects the facts on the ground in the most fair way I can put them. We did a great episode with Jonathan Strickland, maybe in 2014 about, or 2015, I can't remember which, about just how difficult it is to truly be anonymous on the internet. We're talking about wearing a physical disguise, walking into a library in a different state without bringing your phone once,
yep,
using an assumed identity, and then never going back or being that fake person again. It is difficult. And, you know, I feel for a lot of the people who are maybe a little bit more secure in, or have a little bit more faith in their abilities to be anonymous than they should be. Just stay safe out there, guys.
It makes me think of when you talk about, you know, how difficult it's becoming to be anonymous on the internet. There's a great book by Dave Eggers called The Circle, and it's actually being made into a movie, they're working on it. It's being developed, and the crux of it is there's this Facebook meets Google-esque giant conglomerate that basically owns the internet, and they come up with this concept in order to sign on to this service, this Facebook-esque service that ultimately becomes the internet in this book, you have to be yourself. That's the only way to be a part of it. You can't have an alias. You have to have your one account that is tied to your identity, and everyone knows it's you. And ideally, it means no more trolls. It means no more mean comments on YouTube. It means all of these great things, theoretically, but the way it plays out in the book, not necessarily so great.
I can imagine a supervillain being born from that, so that everyone knows their infamy.
Yeah. Not only that, there's a thing in the book as it develops, and I don't want to spoil anything, but this is very, very early on, where they develop these cameras that people just start wearing everywhere, and they can place them everywhere. They can place them in different locations across the world, so that if there's any kind of social unrest or any kind of injustice is being done, it's constantly being broadcast. Again, on the surface sounds like a great idea, but it means more than that. It means that everything is just static, you know, like nothing can change, kind of. I don't know. It's a very interesting book. I recommend it highly.
I love that
cool,
idea.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a copy I could borrow?
I actually did it on audiobook, but it'd be a good late Christmas present. I really recommend it. Like I said, you know, read the book before the movie comes out. Then you can I talk about the book at Family Christmas. And then when the movie comes out next year, everyone will be like, hey, little Johnny was talking about this book last year.
How prescient little Johnny has become.
Indeed.
Last little bit I want to add into this discussion that you might have is the statement by Hillary Clinton recently about a Manhattan Project for encryption and basically breaking it or wanting to break it and having an initiative to do so.
I didn't hear this.
The internets, just like when CISPA was coming through and PIPA and all that stuff, they are responding, at least anyone who's interested in encryption and keeping information safe, they are responding with great vitriol to this. So if you are interested in that, just do a Google search for Manhattan Project, and literally you will get all the news. It's pretty insane.
And last thing, if we're talking about late Christmas presents, which I don't know why I keep doing, but I guess I've been getting some good gifts this year. Have you heard of the comic series, The Manhattan Projects?
This sounds familiar.
Manhattan
but
Projects,
I don't,
no?
But I don't, I've never read it.
I'll just give you the basic premise is that Robert Oppenheimer, who created the atomic bomb, actually had a evil twin, who lived completely separately. They were separated at birth, but they grew up completely separate environments. Whereas the real Robert Oppenheimer, you know, was educated and became a very well respected researcher, a scientist. His brother ended up on the streets and, you know, in different, psychiatric facilities, etc. But they had the same intellect. And, the very first scene in the book is basically the real Robert Oppenheimer signing on for the Manhattan Projects and then his brother showing up and murdering him and taking his place. And it's also set like in this kind of dystopian, weird sort of future past kind of scenario where like, not like steampunk, but kind of like, you know, it definitely feels like the time period that it's supposed to, but there are like aliens and there's weird technology and things are just a little off. It's sort of this alternate reality, alternate history kind of thing. And it's ongoing and it's in trade paperback. So that's a really cool book. I'm not nearly in it enough as much as I should be, but, I recommend giving that a look for sure.
Writing it down, Noel. Sounds awesome.
Well, should we move on to another topic?
Yeah, what do you have?
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess I'm going to call this the Ballad of Martin Shkreli because I don't know. It's such schadenfreude, you know, but I just, at the end of the day, it's entertaining to me and it pointed out some really big issues with the whole big pharma machine. And this originally kind of came up right around the time we did an episode on the big pharma and just how a lot of the machinations in that business model, you know, are a little bit inherently shady, and but they're not necessarily out in the open. Then you have this kid, Martin Shkreli, who essentially broadcasts everything that's wrong with this industry in the most, you know, millennial oversharing kind of way, you know, just tweeting out all of these like responses to his critics. And if you guys don't know, Martin Shkreli, is this, I believe he's 32 years old, guy who has, you know, done very well for himself managing pharmaceutical companies and doing these startup pharmaceutical companies. And he made the news, several months back when he raised the price of a very old drug that he had bought called Daraprim that's used to treat toxoplasmosis, which is a condition that is very common in general population.
Especially in France.
And well, a lot of people, it comes from cats is one thing that I always hear. And it's very, can go unnoticed, undetected in people that are healthy otherwise, but in cancer patients that are receiving chemo and have lowered immune systems and AIDS, HIV patients, this can be debilitating. It can totally destroy their immune system and shut them down.
May I interject just briefly? I don't want to talk too much in this show because God knows I talk a lot. But we did an episode about toxoplasmosis regarding the nature of the infection, because there's compelling evidence that it actually changes people's personalities in terms of accelerating some forms of mental illness, such as schizophrenia or paranoia, and it affects genders differently. So this is something that I know there are a lot of stereotypes about France, but this is something that baffles a lot of people. To Noel's earlier point, ladies and gentlemen, toxoplasmosis is not generally a lifelong infection, nor is it generally lethal, but it can change your behavior. So if you ever notice that your friend with a lot of cats is getting to be a little bit of a shut-in or even a little bit promiscuous, take care. And blame Martin Shkreli, because it's going to be much more expensive for that person to get well.
It's true. And so going back, that's interesting stuff for sure.
I'm sorry, I have images now of the crazy cat lady who's just very flirty, like overly flirty, but also just covered in cat hair.
Well, and they say too that like if you have it, then cats are more attracted to you. I think we talked about this, Ben. Is that, I think that's true. Anyway, though, so this drug Daraprim has actually been around since 1953, and up until now, it's been believed to be the best treatment for this particular parasite. And so Martin Shkreli and his company Turing Pharmaceuticals, which he founded as, well, I guess I'm going to use the term pharmaceutical startup, which to me is counterintuitive. Like it just kind of is like, seems like you shouldn't be able to just start a pharmaceutical company overnight like you would an app or something like that. But that's just me. So Shkreli purchased the rights to this particular drug and for his company, and overnight raised the cost of it more than 55-fold, and I believe it was something like $700 a pill from like $50 a pill.
So insane.
Yeah, and so there was this huge outcry overnight. He became, you know, what folks are calling the most hated man alive, you know, and the internet responded as they do with, you know, pitchforks and torches in the form of hateful Twitter rants, much deserved. And Shkreli just kind of doubled down and responded directly and just was like quoting rap lyrics and at his detractors and just didn't do himself any favors and just kept doubling down. That's the thing about the story that I find so fascinating, is it's like you're seeing all this in real time, these things that the pharmaceutical industries don't want you to know about. This guy, this kid, is just like spilling the beans on all of this excess. I'm not saying that everyone's like this. They, you know, there was a big pharmaceutical group that ejected him. The Pharmaceutical Researchers and Manufacturers of America, which is a large consortium of different pharmaceutical companies, just completely threw him under the bus in terms of, you know, saying that this is not our philosophy. This guy is completely counter to the way we do business. And while that's a, you know, probably a smart PR move, I'm sure it's not entirely true. I mean, there's definitely some underhanded dealings that go on in any kind of business. And I would imagine in the pharmaceutical business, especially because price gouging has been a concern politically for a long time. And it's something that we still see. This to me, though, is just such a brazen example of this just in the public eye, someone that has zero filter. And the story gets weirder, doesn't it?
Yeah, the whole live streaming thing really, I don't know.
But even before that, so, you know, so he did this thing with the drug and there was just a public outcry. He went on talk shows and basically said, you know, hey, I make money. That's what I do. That's my job. You can't hold it against me that I'm, charging what this particular drug is worth. You know, it's been under, it's been undervalued for this long. And now based on, you know, these calculations that me and my people have done, we've decided that it is in fact worth this. And it is a, you know, an equitable cost for this treatment and, you know, how many, based on how many people it affects, et cetera. So then he, after, I mean, Bernie Sanders was tweeting at him, Hillary Clinton, you know, everyone just totally throwing this guy under the bus. He comes back and says, you know what? After some serious consideration, I've decided that we're going to lower the cost. But he doesn't say how much, doesn't say when. And then basically he changes his mind again and says, you know what? Psych. And completely lets it go.
Not even basically. That's,
yeah, that's exactly yeah, what he did. Yeah. So then this is the part where it gets real weird. This guy has a kind of, he's sort of a music freak. He's really into collecting music memorabilia. Apparently he has, one of Kurt Cobain's credit cards that he whips out at fancy cocktail parties to impress his friends. You know, weird, right? So, he, There was, you guys out there may be aware that the Wu-Tang Clan, a really popular, hip-hop outfit that's been around since the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, very, very important group. A lot of people went on from that to have very successful solo careers, Ol' Dirty Bastard, The Method Man, etc. And the head of the group, the RZA, does a lot of music for movies, Jim Jarmusch movies, and, did a lot of the music for the Tarantino films, the Kill Bill series. So they, I don't understand why, but their newest record, they decided they were going to make one insanely, what's the word, Ben? Bespoke version.
Decadent.
Yeah, just like completely like gold, you know, filigreed leather bound tome, you know, with like parchment paper with the liner notes and this, you see it. It's quite beautiful, but they didn't exactly put a price on it, but they were going to auction it off to the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. And, the story dropped that it had sold because people were kind of making fun of this. They were like, who's going to pay $1 million for a Wu-Tang record? And then all of a sudden it sold. And there was actually a lot of speculation for a while on the internet that it was in fact Quentin Tarantino, because mm-hmm. he's a huge fan, has worked with RZA, etc. Nope, surprise, it's our boy Martin Shkreli.
Yeah, what a freaking turn. I can't believe that that's who bought it.
It was absurd. It was like this guy had already just been in the news, just like becoming this hilarious like supervillain, and now he's gonna take the Wu-Tang Clan record for himself.
So maybe he's riding high, even though RZA clearly despises him.
Yes.
And they have a public feud on Twitter. He still has an album that many hip-hop fans would likely covet. And it doesn't end there, though. It continues.
It does continue, but just there were some quotes in this article where it talks where he kind of responds to his feud with RZA. And I read this, and I'm like, this kid, is this real? Who would say these things? And yes, it's real. Quote, I bought the album. There's a big bleeping check in RZA and album producer Clivering's pocket now. And he says, this Wu-Tang Clan thing is starting to get pretty tense. You probably see that increasingly. I'm getting pretty frustrated by it. I bought the most expensive album in the history of mankind, and bleeping RZA is talking bleep behind my back and online in plain sight. I'm just getting pissed off. That's not the way I do business. If I hand you $2 million, bleeping, show me some respect. At least have the decency to say nothing or no comment.
And that's not the end either, is it?
That is not the end. There is a happy ending, I would say, although we don't really know how happy that ending is going to be. So last week on December 17th, the internet rejoiced when Martin Shkreli was taken away from his Manhattan apartment wearing a gray hoodie and handcuffs by the FBI for supposedly, allegedly defrauding his investors at the company that he had run prior to Turing called Retrofin. And supposedly he had made some investments on behalf of some folks, and they did not work out. And so he was basically funneling money through the company, allegedly, in order to put money back where he had taken it, you know, and to kind of make sure the investors were happy temporarily, but it was all just kind of like a, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of situation.
Yep. Ponzi,
you know,
scheme. Ponzi scheme. Security
exactly.
fraud, wire
exactly.
fraud.
Exactly. He bailed himself out for $5 million, and now he's, you know, awaiting trial. And he basically has come out and said that all of this high profile, horrible behavior on his part was just a social experiment, just to kind of see, you know, how people would react.
It was a prank, bro. Yeah, I can see him ending up in South America somewhere. I mean, if you have $2 million to spend on an album, you probably have the means to get a fake passport or even maybe a legitimate looking and perhaps actual passport.
Yeah. And the final, blip in this story thus far is actually, there at the end, right before he got busted. Oh, and also there's a wonderful, you can find this online. He live streamed several days of his life. And a lot of it is him playing Xbox, playing guitar, chatting with, high school seniors from his previous, from the place he went to high school in New York, getting asked to the prom and, you know, saying that he would give references to Columbia University for these particular students, things like that. Really classy stuff. The latest story is that he was fired as the CEO of another company called Calo Bios Pharmaceuticals that he acquired relatively recently, and did some pretty interesting financial gymnastics in order to inflate the price, and a lot of investors who were doing a short sale.
Right, yeah. The definition would be the sale of a security that you don't own or that you have borrowed. And so your idea, the motivation for that is you're making a bet that the price of the security is going to go down. So you can borrow it, sell it, it'll go down to a lower price, and you make a profit. So you can do it as speculation or to hedge the downside risk of a long game,
right,
the same security.
So what actually happened was this particular company was about to go under, and Shkreli and his investors at Turing, to my understanding, scooped it up and completely screwed that short sale. So
wow.
There were investors that were betting that it was going to go down, and in fact, the price of the stock rose and continued to rise. And so I was reading an article where a guy was talking about how it was actually a message board that I found, where this guy was talking about how he, now all of a sudden owed E-Trade $200,000 just overnight because this bet did not work out in his favor. And it's because of, this relatively shady transaction that Mr. Shkreli participated in.
Yeah. Well, good for the company though, right?
Maybe.
The people who work there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Don't let me interject too much here, but what maybe it's better, listeners, I know a lot of people, me myself included, will tune out when we hear this abstract sort of removed financial talk. So let's root it in a physical object. The three of us are guys, could you pick like just an object of some sort of worth?
Rubik's cube.
Okay, so a Rubik's cube. So here's how short selling works. So Noel has a Rubik's cube. Matt does not, but Matt wants to make a little money. He wants to have a hustle, right? But he checks where he lives and where he works, and it's Wall Street. So he can't just go out and sell bootleg DVDs. Instead, what he does is he borrows a Rubik's cube from Noel, and the Rubik's cube at the time he borrows it is worth, let's say, $30, and he sells this Rubik's cube to someone else, which unfortunately would be me in the equation. I'm the one getting swindled here. And I buy it for $30. But then the price of not just that Rubik's cube, but every Rubik's cube in the world or in town or wherever Rubik's cubes are held drops to $15 or even just $25, and you're still making money. And so what Matt does then is buys another Rubik's cube, or buys the same Rubik's cube back from me if I'm completely getting screwed, and then returns your Rubik's cube, no harm done, but he's got 15 extra dollars. That's how it works. And I hope that's not overthinking it, but it's difficult at times to understand just the abstract terms getting thrown around without being in a physical object. So,
and the great thing is,
it's not illegal.
Oh, yes. Right. And I didn't mean to imply that what he did was illegal, but it's just kind of, it's the kind of thing that people, suffer for.
Yeah.
That's right.
Again, these are great things to discuss at the dinner table or afterwards.
I think so too. And I mean, this one, there's a lot of humor in this story to me. I think it's, and it certainly could be something that if you got a hardcore capitalist uncle, is going to be like, well, that's how it's supposed to be. This kid did absolutely nothing wrong. He's totally in the right, in the clear.
But see, I think someone who's taking that perspective is going to just not like this guy because he's a young kid.
Exactly. And that's the funny thing. And I was talking with our coworker Casey about this story. He's been following it too, with a similar kind of Schadenfreude kind of attitude as me, because this kid, he's just got the most punchable face. It's just, you want to see him go down because he's just so cocky. And brazenly just unapologetic about this stuff. Casey was like, you know what? I bet that, you know, he did all this stuff that is technically legal. Only now is he getting led away in cuffs because, you know, he took some money from some rich folks on Wall Street, supposedly. Yeah. And that's what it takes. But yeah, why? Why now?
Madoff.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But why now? Because he's running his mouth too much. You know, he's spilling the beans too much. You know, people don't want this out in the open on Twitter like this. Like, put him away. At least scare him. Get him to shut up. Like you said, maybe he just goes away. Maybe he ends up in, you know, the Cayman Islands somewhere. You know?
To be completely objective, it is true that this investigation was ongoing before.
Of course.
Beforehand. But yeah, I admit timing's interesting.
All right. Now, you know, it's winded down. You guys are, everybody's getting a little tired. Everybody's full up and
getting
food.
Itis.
Getting some itis. That's right. Now let's get heavy with it. But not the way you might be thinking. Let's talk about hallucinogens with the family. This is a cool topic that you can bring up from a clinical, a scientific angle, I guess. You can discuss the things that we talked about with using hallucinogens more recently as treatments for things such as PTSD, such as depression, and a couple other things.
Addiction.
Right? Addiction. We talked specifically about addiction. So check out our episodes on this. I think it will be a great thing to discuss because there is somebody in your family who went to Woodstock. There's probably somebody who maybe was a bit of a hippie in your family back in the day.
There was somebody that was working in the labs in Berkeley. Who knows, man?
Maybe one of your cousins is on acid right now.
That's true. Maybe you are on mushrooms. Who knows? Probably not. Hopefully not. But this is a cool subject to discuss, kind of the way we were talking about with the dreams. Just the nature of consciousness, things, big questions that people a lot of times have cool opinions about. And you might not know that your, let's say, aunt or maybe even your mom, your parents have opinions about this that will blow your mind. I would highly recommend it because they're also, I don't know, the way drugs are being treated in our country in particular in the US and in a couple other countries are really, it's changing. And because the way our country in particular and several other countries throughout the world, the way we view drugs of this sort, hallucinogens, is really changing. And I think we're again maybe seeing the possible benefits as opposed to just demonizing them the way we did in the 70s and then ongoing from there.
Well, not only that, I mean, as a society, little by little, it's not a quick process, but we are, you know, having more discussion of things like drug courts and then treatment for addiction rather than just demonizing addicts as criminals. And, you know, these things go hand in hand. I don't know if necessarily we're going to be in a world where, you know, heroin addicts are being treated with LSD, but it's an interesting conversation to have.
Sure.
And they're definitely not in the same class. You know, like we're talking about, something that opens up pathways, you know, in your mind and lets you experience things in a different way versus something that literally ravages your body and makes you dependent in a way that, precludes you from doing pretty much anything else. And that's what you seek at all times. So, I mean, I just think it's interesting that we, are getting to a place where these conversations are more socially acceptable. And so why not try it out at the Christmas dinner
table? Test the waters if you're brave.
All hallucinogens are not created equally. There are several that are not just known, but expected to impart a non-enjoyable experience, something much more close to the revelatory act of waking up as Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, or excuse me, Neo. I think he was supposed to be acting in that show, and pulling the tube out of your mouth and realizing you're a pod in a giant machine world. In this kind of revelation, these would be things like ayahuasca and Ibogaine, I think, or Ibogaine, which I may be mispronouncing, which is apparently a surefire quit smoking aid, as with other addiction, as you guys mentioned. So there's a big difference between the recreational stuff and then the spiritual awakening stuff. And you know what, though, if as Matt said, if your relatives have already had experience with it, they'll know.
They'll know. I don't know if this is necessarily the best dinner table discussion, but I did feel like I should mention it because when we did the episode a few weeks ago on crisis actors, I think I was probably the most taken aback in the room by it. You know, I just find it a little bit difficult to wrap my head around how anyone could honestly believe some of these theories. The idea that, you know, the Sandy Hook shooting, for example, was staged in its entirety, that, you know, I just don't understand how you can look at, you know, the fact that children, you know, were killed, families were torn apart, lives were ruined, and say that this didn't actually take place. And I believe in the episode I likened it to, you know, Holocaust denial. But in the news, there was a Florida professor who was actually hired to teach a class at Florida Atlantic University on conspiracy theories.
James Tracy.
James Tracy.
We mentioned him in the video and I think on here, perhaps on audio.
Okay. I don't recall that. I'm sorry.
No, at the time he was a professor for Florida Pacific University.
Well, as it turns out, he was canned, just completely, because he was making some of these statements and, you know, actually, bordering on harassment of the parents of a 6-year-old child who was killed in the shooting. And the statement that the university released is as follows. Today, James Tracy, an associate professor in the School of Communication and Multimedia Studies, was served a notice of proposed discipline termination by the Vice Provost for Academic Affairs at Florida Atlantic University. And at the time, which was Saturday, today being Tuesday, December 22nd, this happened on the 19th. He's had 10 days to respond from that time. This actually came after the boy's parents, Lenny and Veronique Posner, wrote an op-ed in a local newspaper, the Sun Sentinel of Brainerd County, Florida. And they basically said that Tracy had led a group of people, in, you know, encouraging them to harass these parents, about their part that they supposedly played in this, you know, charade, and, you know, to promote his conspiracy theories that the event was staged. And they, quote, "They seek us out and accuse us of being government agents who are faking our grief and lying about our loss." So
that's rough.
It's rough. And that sort of mirrors the my perspective on the whole thing when we were doing the episode, how I, you know, kind of felt a little taken aback by the whole concept. So, you know, interesting to see that development.
And you're one of the nicest people I know. So for you to be a little bit taken aback, to me, it's the equivalent of someone else being profoundly offended. You know, we also received a number of tweets and emails regarding crisis actors. I don't know if you checked out the YouTube comments, but it is a very, very emotionally charged subject.
Sure.
And
on both sides, I imagine.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to speak directly to you, audience. And I can't speak for anyone else, of course, but I personally immensely appreciate the feedback from the folks who thought that we did a good job trying to address this topic, because we don't like to suppress anything. It's not the nature of this show. So we like to address everything to the utmost of our ability, which means critical thinking, which means looking at both sides of something and seeing what, if any, evidence exists on either one. We try to handle that respectfully. And I can say that I don't always get it right, but well, luckily enough, we have you guys out there keeping us honest. All right. Well, guys, unfortunately, it looks like it's also almost our time. Noel, do we have any sad end of the year music or any like bittersweet, like it's going to be okay kind of music?
Sure.
Nope, I don't like this. Turn this off.
All right. How about this?
Better.
Yeah.
You're getting there.
Yeah, maybe third time's true.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, that's it.
Yep.
Oh, man, I have maybe 3 feelings a year, and I think this is one of them. So recently, CISPA, it's all but passed, which is an internet surveillance bill which removes the protections that theoretically or nominally exist between your personal information as known by a private corporation and as known by multiple governments. So another thing that happened recently while we were all Twitter-pated over Star Wars is that Zimbabwe moved to make the Chinese yuan a legal currency. Beijing canceled, in return, all of their debts. This edges the yuan a little bit closer to being an international currency capable of combating the petrodollar. So stay tuned to your gas pumps.
The petrodollar is one that I wanted to bring up, but I thought I wasn't sure if it would be too much to discuss, but I feel like that's a great way to get in some of the larger ideas or some of the more specific conspiracy theories. I think the petrodollar really brings things together as a way to discuss smaller things.
Yeah, maybe I messed up because I was thinking of things for the listener in 2016. It may be entirely possible that you say Zimbabwe has started using China's currency, and you know, I don't know if people at your holiday party will care, but.
Well, it would be cool if they did, because I think it's important world news. Well, I mean, that's really great.
I mean, at this point, I would say the holiday meal is done. Everyone's comatose on the couch. You know, we're thinking about New Year's. Let's just give us some more. What are some things to be thinking about moving into 2016? What are the stories that you're seeing the seeds of now that are going to really take off?
Sure. Well, of course, if you listen to the show, you're probably familiar with the various conspiracy theories regarding Donald Trump, which I talked about a little bit on Periscope, and regarding Bernie Sanders, which, Noel, I believe you touched on in an earlier audio podcast, and both have some intriguing points to them. Stay tuned to that if you are invest in U.S. elections. You may also wonder about how the situation in the Middle East will work out. Will they reach detente? At this point, and how ironic, because I was working on an episode about prophecy and I got the release date wrong. So I think I'm going to stay away from predictions, actually. No one really has a crystal ball in the Middle East. We do have some interesting stuff coming up about predicting the future, about Gnosticism. Several of these are in the new year. Let's see what else we might touch on. The nature of artificial intelligence or even magic. And we have a, well, I guess I'll let you in on the secret. We have a long list of topics suggested both by you, by sources that we know outside of the show, and things that we have found in our individual ramblings through the dark alleys of the internet and the places we travel. So we have a lot more in store for you on the way. I'd like to pass the mic to you guys. Do you have any year-end statements to our listeners before we bid them adieu?
Oh, I just want to thank you guys for having me on the show. It's been a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing it into the new year. It's been cool passing from, you know, the mixing desk into the booth. So I've been really, really appreciative of the opportunity, and I hope everyone's been enjoying it.
We love having you. It's fantastic to have a third person in here just to throw things off of, and you absorb what we talk about in here really well, and then you have ideas and throw them back out. So good work. All right. I'm sorry. I'm not going to pat your back too much, but you're awesome, Noel. I think our people agree.
Yeah. I mean, Noel, it's no secret that we are not just work friends. We're French friends. We hang out and do stuff and laugh at each other's jokes and whatnot.
It's true.
Also, you know, even if that were the case, even if you were my very best friend, even if you had saved my life in a shark attack or a car crash or a lottery deal gone wrong.
Or a shark crash.
Or a shark crash. Mm-hmm. Even if that happened, you wouldn't be on here if you weren't good at what you do.
Well, you know, I feel the same way, and it's a lot of fun just chatting with you guys, and I think it's been fun just taking some of the cool conversations that Ben, you and I, and Matt, and you and I as well, and all three of us in at work and outside of work have, and kind of do it on the show. So I appreciate it, and looking forward to next year.
Heck yeah. We're getting I love this. We need to do this again. Let's have a drunk podcast next year.
Yes. Yes.
We'll clear it with the higher ups.
No.
No. We'll just do it. I'd like to add briefly. I know the podcast is going on too long at the moment, so I'll make it short. But you specifically listening to this are the reason this show exists in the first place. And we have been close so many times. to this, this thing not continuing. It has been endangered. It has been vulnerable. All those other words people use for animals, dwindling, right? It has been in danger of cancellation. We have been in danger many times of being fired. However, somehow we made it, and all of our best ideas, as ever, come from you. Yes, you specifically. So we'd like to hear them.
You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Conspiracy Stuff. We are all over that place. You can also go to our website.
And that is stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com. And that's where you can find blog posts, podcasts, every podcast that we've ever done, every video that you guys have ever done, and more.
You can check out periscope.tv/conspiracy stuff, which is where Mr. Bolin normally does our stuff. We got some guests who go on there. Got a dude named Steve who chills with Ben sometimes.
I've hung out with Steve and Ben before on Periscope. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, and I just really quickly, I hope you've checked out our The Meeting video episode. That was a whole lot of fun to shoot the other day.
I really enjoy being part of it.
And I am a little worried that it looked behind the curtain a bit too much, but I think people can, I don't know, they can get over it.
No, we're all friends here. And lastly, if you don't want to do any of that stuff, gives you the willies, whatever, write a good old-fashioned email. You can write that too.
Conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracy stuff.